There's been discouraging news from the Supreme Court this week, but my guest says that stopping abortion is just one heartbeat away.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks for joining us on today's Line of Fire broadcast. Are you ready to be encouraged? We always speak the truth. We tackle challenging issues, but we always do so with a spirit of faith in the midst of challenging times and a challenging world. Are you ready to be encouraged? 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. 866-348-7884. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you, serving as your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be joined by Janet Porter, and we're going to talk about the heartbeat bill and why this could be so significant. Yes, it's true that there was discouraging news with the decision of John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts, to side with liberal justices and vote against a Louisiana bill that would have just been one more step towards pro-life in the Supreme Court. Discouraging news on that front, but here's the reality, friends. We're in a fallen, messed up world. Let's just understand. We're in a fallen, messed up world. The first parents of this human race, Adam and Eve, saw their firstborn son kill his younger brother. I mean, do family tragedies get much worse than that? Your firstborn child kills your secondborn child in cold-blooded murder? That's the beginning of the human race. The greatest leaders that we had in the Old Testament were still flawed and fell short. David, a man after God's own heart, came under divine discipline. Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, came under severe divine discipline. Here, the Messiah, the perfect one, comes to his own, and his own people as a nation don't receive him. The Apostle Paul, one of the most anointed human beings who ever lived, rejected and persecuted city after city. The gospel's been here 2,000 years, and still much of the world rejects the message of the cross. So we shouldn't somehow think that we are just going to see good results all the time. We want to see positive results. But hey, before abortion in America, there was segregation. Before segregation, there was slavery. And with that, there was mistreatment at times of Native Americans. Or in the midst of our Christian foundations, there were the Salem witch trials. In other words, we've never been a perfect nation. There is no perfect nation on the planet. There is no nation on the planet that is primarily godly. Every nation in the world is primarily ungodly in terms of overall, with godly remnants in the midst of it, and some with larger godly remnants. The modern state of Israel is not a godly state. Just reality. So while it's disappointing to see a defeat here or a defeat there with the court or in the culture wars, or to see the advance of a cause that we believe is a wrong cause, let's not pull our hair out or throw in the towel. Jesus is still Lord, working in the midst of a world where people have a free will and can freely choose. So my goal is to stir you to action. My goal is to stir you to faith. My goal is to stir you to take a stand for what is right at any cost, to live for Jesus, to make him known. And then the rest is in God's hands. The rest is in God's hands. 866-34-TRUTH. I have a question for you. I'm going to do a Twitter poll on this in a moment, but feel free to call in. I'm curious to know if you go to a Bible-believing, gospel-preaching church, so the Bible is considered God's inspired word, Jesus is the way to salvation, he died for our sins, rose from the dead, you hold to the fundamentals of the faith. What percentage of sermons that you hear from the pulpit, or if you're in house church, whatever the setting, the regular teachings, what percentage would you say are addressed to or devoted to politics? speak by name about political leaders, speak by name about political issues. What percentage of the sermons over the course of a year? Is it less than 10%? Is it maybe between 10% and 25%? Is it more than that? Is it not at all? Let me know. I'm just curious because I'm pretty sure I know the answer if we did surveys across America. Just curious to know those listening. So give me a call. Just like you to weigh in. You don't have to take much time on the phone. Just answer a simple question or two. 866-348-7884. The reason I bring this up is that earlier today, I was on a liberal radio show with a liberal radio host. Now, he let me speak fairly and freely. I'm credit for that. And then he came back quite plainly with where he differed with me. The couple of calls we took at the end were quite interesting. One from a state rep, that was one of the wilder calls I've gotten in a while. I mean, I just with a smile, just kind of laid back into his false statements. But we were talking about my new book, Evangelicals at the Crossroads, Will We Pass the Trump Test? Comes out July 13th, and I think it's must reading for evangelicals in America, must reading leading up to the 2020 elections and beyond. Because, friends, there's something more important than who wins the presidential elections. It is the conduct of the people of God. It is the testimony of the people of God. It is how we live out our faith in the public square. It is whether we can get involved in the political scene without compromising our testimony. That's what we are talking about. So the book is going to be very, very important reading, and it comes out July 13th. As we get a little closer to it, we'll open up more of the contents to you as you listen and as you watch. You can pre-order on Amazon or on our website now. But there is an impression that evangelicals, in particular white evangelicals, stand strongly with President Trump, will defend him at any cost, and he can do no wrong in their eyes. And obviously, if that's the way we are perceived, that does compromise our testimony because the president says and does many things that, from a Christian perspective, are indefensible, while at the same time doing many good and positive things. So I know that there are some major evangelical leaders who are constantly speaking in defense of Donald Trump or have over the last 4 years. And there is an impression because of that, that evangelicals in general are very much politically minded and that in pulpits of churches around America, there's a lot of talk about politics and who to vote for, etc. My impression is that there's minimal talk about politics, that prominent evangelical leaders will say things and then social media will talk among ourselves and talk about this a lot. But that overall, that's not where the focus of preaching and teaching is. In fact, in many churches, there's a desire to hear more about political issues or social issues because people feel they need guidance. My impression is that your average local church is much more involved in shepherding the flock, feeding the flock, ministering to the people of God, and reaching out to the community, reaching out to the lost, reaching out with good works to help those in need, that your average evangelical church or gospel preaching church is much more involved in that than it is in politics. That your average evangelical church, gospel preaching church, is not going to have a sign in front of it as to who they're voting for. That again, I'm talking on average. So we'll get some feedback. I'll do a Twitter poll on that. We'll see if things are what I think they'll be. Also, I found in a desk drawer today, I know when I had put this there, so it's not like it was hidden for years, but it is a very tattered, torn, worn edition of Life magazine. Life, the famous magazine for so many years now. I guess they just put out some special edition issues from time to time. It's October 10th, 1969. Big color, 40 cents. And it says, Life, a new series. Revolution. What are the causes? How does it start? Can it happen here? And just hold it up. Those watching can see. Revolution. Yeah, quite the cover. And oh, and on the back, what do you think's on the back? a cigarette ad. Yeah, a cigarette ad. Those were the old days. Don't settle for some of the taste some of the time. Viceroy gives you all the taste all the time. And, of course, there's the guy and the gal, and, boy, this just makes life better. Viceroy cigarettes. Some of you remember. Okay. But I hold this up to say the 1960s were a revolutionary time in many nations, but in America, with the counterculture revolution. And as a result of that revolution, culture shifted in many wrong ways. Positive things like civil rights movement, positive things in terms of greater opportunities for women, those were steps in the right direction. But most of the other things that happened were negative, and generation gap and rebellion and radical feminism and radical gay activism and so many other things that rose out of that time and then had a negative effect on the culture as a whole. I lived through that. Some of you lived through that. And as we're watching what's happening in America in front of us, I can say that some of the most extreme elements, even extreme for the 60s, are becoming more and more mainstream every day that goes by, and more overtly mainstream. And remember, with all the iconography with all of the iconoclasm of the 60s and the smashing of idols and the tearing down of things that were sacred in America, the statues weren't being toppled. Abraham Lincoln's statue or George Washington's or Ulysses Grant, who fought against the slavery South, that these statues were not being defaced or attacked or pulled down. Things are far more extreme today. The answer is not simply political. The answer is gospel-based. The answer is not something radical, new, different, but New Testament discipleship, New Testament following Jesus, New Testament devotion, New Testament service, New Testament faith, New Testament anointing of the Spirit, New Testament taking a stand for Jesus by life or by death. That's the answer to the chaos and upheaval that surrounds us. All right, we're going to come back. I'm going to go to your calls. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. And again, if you haven't yet ordered Evangelicals at the Crossroads, you can do so at Amazon.com or at my website. We have a special offer there, AskDrBrown.org. Be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. Again, bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Janet Porter talking about the heartbeat bill. Let's start in Mechanicsville, Virginia. Connor, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I'm just calling in response to that question you posed earlier about politics in the pulpit, essentially.
Yes, sir.
In all the churches I've been in, there has been no speed of politics directly in the pulpit, thankfully. The closest thing I think that's come to it is in my current church, just addressing the issues, you know, Black Lives Matter issue that's going on. That's the closest thing that came to with.
Yeah, and Connor, how many years have you been going to gospel preaching churches?
I've been going to gospel preaching churches for at least, hopefully, all my life.
Okay, well, how old are you?
I've been Catholic for first. I'm 23 years old.
23, and how many different churches have you been in?
I have been to a Roman Catholic Church for the first, 10 years of my life. That's one.
Uh-huh.
A community, non-denominational, it's two, Baptist, and now Assemblies of God. Total of five churches thus far.
Got it. All right, so your experience has been pretty much the same, from Roman Catholic to Baptist to Assembly of God, that you're not hearing sermons about political issues. You're hearing a little now because of the Black Lives Matter issues, etc. But otherwise, not hearing at all about political issues from the pulpit.
Yeah, and even then, at that point, was dressed more of a hurt, more feelings rather than any taking any political side. Even dressing the riots or her stance on what was going to be done in response, just the overall hurt that people were feeling.
Got it. All clear. Yeah, and seeking to minister the gospel into the situations we should. Yeah. Hey, Connor, thanks for calling. And my guess is that your experience is similar to the experience of many, many others. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. All right. Feel free to call in if your experience is similar to Connor, or if it's different, that no, we're dealing with political issues on a regular basis. My suspicion is that when I do the Twitter poll, that we will be probably less than 10% will say, or people will say 10% or less of the sermons over the course of the year deal with political issues. That'd be my guess. I'll make choices 10% or less, 10 to 25%, 25 to 50% over, well, it's not going to be over 50%. Anyway, we shall see. All right, we'll switch subjects here for a moment. John in Queens, New York, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. Are you there, John?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Oh, hi, doctor. Thank you for taking me on. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I was reading, this is really in my mind, and it's sort of Matthew 10:1, Jesus sends out the 12 disciples, and he gave them the authority to drive out impure spirits and heal diseases and sicknesses.
Yes,
now,
sir.
My question is, on 1 Corinthians, they talk about gifts of the Spirit. Mm-hmm. It seems like everyone gives the Spirit separately. And so I was wondering, do we get it separately, not like the 12 disciples? Seems like the 12 disciples got, like, you know, like, I guess I could call it the whole package. Is that the same? How come, you know, I can't, you know, like, for instance, authority to, you know, to drive out spirits like they did? I mean,
John, I believe that mm-hmm. every child of God, every follower of Jesus has authority in Jesus to drive out demonic spirits. I don't see that anywhere as a special gift. I see that mm-hmm. as something that comes with the Holy Spirit being in us and upon us. Now, if we're not walking in faith, if we're not walking in a right relationship with God, then mm-hmm. It could well be the situation where we are not operating in the potential that we could to deal with demonic powers. But when it comes to the disciples, they were sent out on a specific mission as Jesus' representatives all at one time, and he sent them out and commissioned them and empowered them to do what they did, right? And potentially, by faith, any of us could heal the sick or raise the dead, potentially. In other words, if we believe God, all things are possible to him who believes. James, Jacob, the fifth chapter, says the prayer offered in faith will make the sick person well. So in that case, anyone can be used by God to heal the sick, to set captives free. But as we all come to the Lord at different times and we all have different callings within the body, we're not all going to receive everything at the same time, and none of us will have everything in terms of special gifts. So potential by faith, any of us could pray and be used by God for a miracle, right? You're driving down the road. You see a terrible accident. A child's been hit, a hit-and-run driver. The child's lying there, not breathing, and you cry, God, have mercy, save this child. And they're raised from the dead, or they come back to life. God can do that through anyone, right?
Right.
But as far as a gift of healing or a gift of special faith or a gift of prophecy, that's something that is not just once in a blue moon or once in 20 years. That's something that on a regular basis is working in a particular person's life. And again, one has one gift, one has another, because we all need each other. Just like one person has a special gift of giving, one person has a special gift of administration, one person has a special gift of teaching, one person has a special gift of showing mercy, This is similar to what Paul lists in Romans 12. So the same way, this one has a special gift of prophecy, this one of interpretation of tongues, this one of healing, this one of words of knowledge. And this way we complement one another and we realize that it's not the person, it's the Holy right. Spirit. And that's the key thing. It's not look at me, it's wow, the right. Lord is right. working through, I can't do anything. He's working through mm-hmm. it. And then we're dependent on one another and we honor one another just as we do the whole body.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much, Doctor.
You are very welcome, John. Appreciate that. Hey, let me tell you a quick story. And just a reminder that the Holy Spirit is working through flawed human vessels, that none of us in and of ourselves are perfect or complete, that we need the Lord, and that His strength is manifest through our weakness. And by His grace, we live lives worthy of the Lord. Okay, so a pastor told me this story. He said, it's going to sound like I'm speaking badly about someone else, but I'm actually speaking about myself here. He said he was in a church, a very large, prominent church, won't mention the state. And in those days, it was very common that you'd have the elders or leaders sitting on the platform. Now it's less common. When I came to faith, that was the norm. The pastor, other leaders would sit on the platform behind the podium and behind the pulpit, and that was the norm. So that's how it was. The pastor was making some announcements behind the pulpit. The elders were sitting on the platform, and a man that they knew, a Christian leader from the outside, came walking in and without invitation walked right up and sat down with the elders on the pulpit, behind the pulpit. And my friend looked at that and was offended. Like, who does he think he is? Yeah, he's spoken here. We know him, but just walk in and sit down. He said, then in a very obvious way, and if you've been in Pentecostal charismatic circles, you know, people can have these mannerisms like, yes, Lord speaking to the members. He said, in a very obvious and outward way, the Lord is saying something, or he believes he's getting a message from the Lord, right? And he then proceeds without invitation to walk over to the pastor and to interrupt and to deliver a prophetic word to him, which was exactly right on target. The content and the timing, right on target. And my friend was stunned. And he said, Lord, how can you use him? And the Lord said, I use you. So we have to remember that there are no superstars. That as Paul wrote to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians, we have this power in earthen vessels so that it might be known that this is from God and not from us. That when you lay your hands on a sick person and they're healed, it's not because you have some magic in your hands. It's because the Holy Spirit is healing through you. When you get up and preach an amazing message and many people get right with God, it's not because you're such a great orator. It's because the Holy Spirit spoke through you. When you sit down at the piano and begin to play some quiet worship music and suddenly people are weeping, it's not simply because you're a good piano player. It's because the Holy Spirit's working through you. So we don't boast in the flesh. That's why God uses the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. We don't boast in the flesh. We boast in the Lord. And that's what's written in Jeremiah 9, which Paul then quotes in 1 Corinthians 1. Let him who boasts, boast in the Lord. Let your boast be, I'm a child of God. Let your boast be, I belong to Jesus. Let your boast be, God saved me and gave me his Spirit. We boast in the Lord, not in ourselves. All right, we'll be right back with Janet Porter talking about the heartbeat bill, why this is significant for all of America, and why in the midst of some discouragement in the pro-life movement, these are words of encouragement. We'll be right back. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. If you are involved in the pro-life movement, if you care about pro-life issues, then you know this was a very disappointing week, a sense of deep betrayal as Chief Justice John Roberts, who was appointed by President George W. Bush, sided with liberal justices, a decision that he thought was wrong, but because the court had previously voted a certain way, he felt he had to vote that way, effectively voting against his own vote from a few years back. And a bill in Louisiana about unsafe abortion, simply saying that any doctor performing abortions had to be able to admit someone to a hospital within 30 miles, something that simple, still got defeated in the court. You could say, well, that's discouraging, and why even try? Forget the courts, forget legislation. It's not going to change anything. Well, my guest, Janet Porter, has some news that will encourage you and give you a ray of hope in the midst of the discouragement and a path to bring about change while pointing to the humanity of the unborn. Janet is an author. She is an activist. She leads faith to action. And she's going to talk to us about the heartbeat bill, what's happened in Tennessee, and what could happen across the nation. Janet, thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire.
Thanks so much, Dr. Brown. It's a privilege to be here with you.
Let me ask you first how you felt when the ruling came down earlier this week about the Louisiana bill.
I felt like so many others around the country, betrayed by Chief Justice Roberts. He has, as you know, disappointed us many times in the past. And I think what it does, more than anything, to me, is point to the importance of the upcoming elections. It's one of the reasons why I dedicated my book to President Donald J. Trump, because there has not been anyone in the White House who has done more as he's filled the courts, who is planning on putting new pro-life justices on the Supreme Court, filling any vacancies in the future. And this is the critical part of where we are right now. We are at a 5-4 decision in a very reasonable and basic law from Louisiana that says you need to have admitting privileges if you're going to be doing surgeries of abortions. It's absurd that we would see a loss when we've got the court in the position that it is. But John Roberts just cannot be counted on, which says we need a president who's going to appoint pro-life justices in the future to fill the vacancies, the upcoming vacancies that I know Ruth Bader Ginsburg is very likely to be someone who may be next because of her age and her health. We know there's going to be a vacancy, and we know there's going to be a vacancy soon. The question is who's going to fill it, and it just absolutely has to be President Trump if you want to see children protected in our lifetime.
And Janet, your new book, A Heartbeat Away, why the title? What's the book about?
The book is about an idea that God gave me about a decade ago that says, listen, if we can't rescue every child just yet, if we can't start the legal protection at the point of when each of our lives began, at the point of fertilization, conception, then let's at least recognize the universally recognized indicator of life that doctors around the world recognize, and that is a human heartbeat. You know, it's the reason why we've never been to the funeral of somebody with a beating heart. It's the reason why they have those heart monitors in hospitals. They're not there for decoration. Everyone knows if there's a heartbeat, there's life. And all we're saying with a heartbeat bill is very simply that if a heartbeat is detected, the baby is protected. Hey, let's no longer discriminate against the youngest members of our human family. Let's use that same indicator that we use across the board everywhere else, include the very young in this endeavor. And I think that's really the idea behind the Heartbeat Bill, the Heartbeat Away book that itemizes that even before I got the book out, it's already outdated. I said there were 9 heartbeat bills, or there's about to be 10. As the governor of Tennessee has agreed to sign the bill into law, that will mean that we will have seen heartbeat bills pass in Arkansas, North Dakota, Iowa, Mississippi, Kentucky, Georgia, Missouri, Louisiana, and Ohio, where the battle all began back in 2011.
So the bill then says, as these bills have been passed, 9 and about to be 10, that the baby is protected once a heartbeat is detected. Is it that simple?
It's really that simple. There's a life of the mother exception, a physical health exception, but that says no. We're going to recognize this baby as a member of the human family with a beating heart. And once we hear that heartbeat, the same as anyone else in the hospital, same as if a person we found lying on the street, we wouldn't just conduct a funeral. We would check for a pulse because that is an indicator of life, and we're going to quit ignoring it when it comes to the very young. So that's the gist of the heartbeat bill. It's just, as you said, very, very simple. If a heartbeat is detected, the baby is protected. It's now been introduced in 29 states, and as we've mentioned, is passed and about to be number 10 as the governor of Tennessee is about to sign that bill into law.
I want to get back to the courts. I want to get back to President Trump in a moment. But a larger question. Many times when we care about an issue as passionately as we do, pro-life issues and caring about every life, beginning in the womb and then outside the womb, there's a feeling of if you want to see it all happen, all or nothing at all, or how can you even make an exception or anything like that. And many would say, look, you have to be incremental in bringing about change. You know, William Wilberforce and others fighting against slavery recognize that. Take incremental steps. That's one thing. And the second thing is every life saved is positive. So if you can't save all 10, if you've got people drowning, you dive in and you grab as many as you can. You don't say, because we can't save all 10, we're not going to dive in and save any. Has that been a help to you emotionally, spiritually, psychologically to say, hey, we're never going to get everything we want in this fallen world, but let's do what we can to make a difference in as many lives as possible?
Well, I think your analogy is a very good one. My position has always been, and I think the true pro-life position, is we try everything. I mean, we've fought, and for years I worked in the incremental approach. You know, we did parental consent and the woman's right to know, the 24-hour waiting period. I even lobbied to pass the first ban on partial birth abortion, but those millimeter increments, they didn't get us very far. We still have a body count of over 1 million innocent children every year.
Yep.
So I've also been a part of the personhood effort and said, let's try to get them all. But the position is you don't say because we can't rescue every child, we don't get as many as we can. Well, that's really what the heartbeat bill. It's an incremental bill, but it's a great big increment. In fact, Dr. Wilkie, before he passed away, the founder of the pro-life movement, National Right to Life, and the establishment group, he said this could actually protect 95% of the children whose lives are on the line in an abortion mill. This doesn't get us all the way to the point of conception, our goal of protection, but it does get us within inches. Where we are right now, we're miles away with the court-sanctioned view of viability that says, hey, we can only protect children if our technology is up to a standard where we can sustain the life outside the womb. That's a terrible arbitrary method. We got a scientific method. It is a scientific solution that says, look, you know, wherever you are on the abortion issue, we can at least all agree that a fellow human being with a beating heart is worthy of legal protection. And that's really what the Barna poll showed. There was a recent George Barna poll that showed that 86% of Republicans favored this, but 69% or 7 out of 10 in America believe that if a doctor can detect the heartbeat of an unborn baby, that baby should be legally protected by law. And what's surprising to many is that poll found an even a Democrat majority, 55% of Democrats believe that the heartbeat bill is something that they could support because it's a common sense thing. You know, to deny a heartbeat is to deny science. To ignore it is heartless. And that's really the bottom line. We want any bill that protects anyone, but this bill happens to get us inches from our goal. And it's just a scientific solution that tells the court, you know, the Supreme Court has said, hey, we're allowed to legally protect children if there is a likelihood of survival to live birth. Well, guess what the medical experts found? That if there is a detectable heartbeat in an unborn baby, that baby has a 95 to 98% likelihood of survival to live birth. We've got a much better indicator than viability. Viability is a measurement. They take a measurement and they take a guess. And it can be as much as 90% wrong. But heartbeat, it's closer to 98% right, so that if the child is got that beating heart, it will very likely survive to live birth, almost certainly survive to live birth. And we're just telling the court, listen, you can save face. You don't have to admit that what you've done is taken the lives of 60 million innocent children. We can just move the marker and say we've got a better approach. We've got a more scientific standard, and that's what the heartbeat bill does.
And Janet, you followed the stats over the years of women who had ultrasounds. And if they had an ultrasound before an abortion, the vast, vast majority decide against having the abortion. And there have been efforts to, before you have an abortion, you must view an ultrasound. Some states have gone for that. And then, of course, you have these movable clinics where people pull up with a truck in front of the abortion clinic and say, hey, would you like to have an ultrasound first? And so many women who do that will not go ahead and have the abortion. This is a similar approach in that you are emphasizing this is not just a clump of cells. You know, when a mother feels the baby kick the first time, you know, I remember with our first child, and my wife says, wait, now try to get your hand there to feel, and the excitement, the amazement of the life in there. But the most fundamental outward indicator, because obviously DNA, everything, this is the moment the child's conceived. That's a real human being. But this is something that's more tangible, something that people can feel more. Hey, there we found the heartbeat. So it does really appeal to the humanity of the mother, the father, and the society.
And let me tell you how it does that. When we actually brought in, when we first introduced the bill in Ohio, we brought in the youngest to ever testify. We brought in a 9-week-old unborn baby with a mobile ultrasound. And right there in the legislative committee, we did this in the state, and we did it in Congress. We brought in an unborn child whose heartbeat was seen and heard by the legislators in the committee. And, you know, the pro-aborts went crazy, and, you know, Janet, her antics and Janet, her, you know, gimmicks. I said, isn't it sad that to defend your pro-abortion position, you've got to deny science. You've got to run from technology. And that's what they're doing. But when we showed that baby's heartbeat on the ultrasound screen there in Congress, in the Judiciary Subcommittee, what we saw is this. The pro-aborts were all there. They were, you know, disruptive, and they were wearing purple, and apparently purple's the new pink. They were all there. But when that baby's heartbeat was seen and heard on the screen, the room was silent. Mm. And even one of the protesters who had been disruptive moments earlier was seen wiping tears from her eyes. And what this told me is that if the heartbeat of an unborn baby can reach even the hardest of hearts, it can reach America. And we found that in Ohio, where one of the women was asked by a friend to take an abortion, take her to an abortion mill to have her child killed. And she said, once I saw that ultrasound, once I heard about the publicity, just the publicity of the heartbeat bill saved a baby's life. They handed me the phone. They showed me months later that a little boy named Aiden was saved.
Wow.
Just because of the information about the heartbeat and just the publicity before it ever passed.
All right, friends, we'll be right back. We want to get a few more minutes with Janet Porter. Check out her new book, A Heartbeat Away. Janet Porter, A Heartbeat Away.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm speaking with Janet Porter. She's the author of an important new book, A Heartbeat Away. Janet, I do have one more question about justices being appointed and the president. But first, tell me about the book. Who's it for? How will it benefit readers?
Sure. The book, A Heartbeat Away, is for those people who, you know, some of them have been, you know, ardent pro-life activists for many years and decades, as I was. And they're going to say, there's nothing new under the sun. I've heard it all. This is new. What this book does is give us what the pro-life movement has been missing for nearly 50 years, and that is a clear pathway to victory. It's also for those that are maybe in a purple state, like I was in Ohio, where we were faced with what seemed like insurmountable obstacles, primarily from RINOs, Republicans in name only, who were blocking this most protective bill to ever pass in the state legislature. And it's the ways to get around it, the creative ways to get around it, how you need to do whatever it takes. And what does that look like? You know, we ran full-page ads and television commercials. We actually had an animation done, a cartoon that helped to get the bill through. One speaker of the House said, I'm going to pass the bill just because I don't want a cartoon made about me. I mean, we tried every creative way that you can imagine, and it took almost a decade to get our bill through. So everything we've learned is in this book. How, whether you are a new pro-lifer or whether you're a seasoned pro-lifer, this book gives you the tools you need to get through the obstacles. And I want to tell you something else. You do not need a massive army to get this done. You can pass a heartbeat bill in your state, as we're finding out they're looking to do it in other nations as well. But where you live, all you need is a handful of pro-life activists who will do whatever it takes. I can count. There were times in this battle that I could count on one hand the people I call my friends, but at least I knew who they were. The people who would not bow down, would not cave in, and that's what it takes. If you really want to end abortion and not just march about it, not just talk about it, then this book is for you. This is how to end abortion, how to stop the killing. And the way to do it is to do something different than we've been doing for the last 47 years. It's an approach that I believe will work. It's, as I mentioned, introduced in 29 states. It's now passed in 10. And with every one of those heartbeat laws, another arrow is being launched through the court system directly aimed at the heart of Roe versus Wade to deliver the fatal blow to abortion on demand. That's what this bill is about. It's about ending abortion. You want to talk about it? Go somewhere else. You want to march about it for another 50 years? This isn't for you. This book is for the people that want the killing to end and care enough to be one of the instruments, one of the warriors, the special forces in this cause to get it done.
Yeah, loud and clear, Janet. And I appreciate the passion, the faith, the zeal, and the practical plan of attack. So, last question. A primary reason that I voted for Donald Trump was the courts, and it was also a vote against Hillary Clinton and those that she would appoint to the courts. Now, of course, there have been hundreds of appointees to federal courts across America by the president that have had a very positive impact in many, many ways. And what, 99% of major cases are never going to make it to the Supreme Court anyway, so they're going to get settled there. But the two justices appointed by the president to the Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, there's a massive disappointment with Justice Gorsuch a couple of weeks ago, not just being on the wrong side of the bill about redefining the meaning of sex, but writing the majority opinion. So some would say, Janet, well, what's the use? I mean, John Roberts was appointed by George W. Bush. What's the use? These guys, you never know how they're going to vote. They're going to disappoint us. I'm sure you've heard that before. How do you respond?
Well, we could always throw up our hands and say, you know, enough's enough. But this isn't about us. This is about the million lives that are on the line every year who are being, you know, brutally tortured in unimaginable ways as they face abortion. It's about our liberties as they're being put to the test. It's about our values that come before the court. And I think that what these recent rulings have done have issued a wake-up call, a very stark wake-up call. But we don't just take the word of someone who says, well, they're conservative and we think they're with us and they're pro-life. We better make darn sure. And that's what I believe President Trump is now willing to do. He's, you know, remember back in the Bush days, they said, we're going to get constitutional conservatives. And they'd use all the code words. Not Trump. President Trump has come out and said, I want only pro-life justices. And that's what we're going to get with him. And that's what we've been getting, as you mentioned, in the federal court system. Do I think every judge he's appointed in the federal court, probably they're not all 100%, but I'll tell you what, they're night and day difference from what we'd see in a Biden administration. We will see pro-abortion justice after pro-abortion justice. And honestly, they're better at it than we are. They make sure of it. They make sure that the judges they put on are going to be pro-death. And that's what we'll get if we don't get Trump back in office. And I believe he's had a pretty stark wake-up call as of late with this Supreme Court. That, you know, you can't even get a Justice Roberts behind a Louisiana bill that's just so basic to say you ought to have admitting privileges in the hospital. That's pro-woman as well as pro-life, and they couldn't even go along with that. So, yeah, we need a new court, and the only chance we have of getting it is President Trump.
Got it. Yeah. Again, it's the alternative. You don't want to put all your trust in a man or in a court. Obviously, we put that trust in the Lord. But what are the alternatives? All right, friends, check out the book, Janet Porter, A Heartbeat Away. Thanks so much for joining us and for all the hard work over these many years. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Sure appreciate it. God bless you.
God bless.
By the way, they can get a signed copy at F2A.org. If they'd like one, we'll get one signed copy off to them at F2A.org.
All right, got it. I should have asked for that, too. The website, F2A.org. God bless you.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Well, so encouraging to hear that from Janet. And the passion. She's been at it a long time. You get discouraged, but she's not. She's not. She's going for it. And look, these are urgent times. I want to show you two headlines, all right? I want to show you two headlines. let's pull up the first headline. This is from St. Louis. And if you know what happened, protesters marched into a closed community, a gated community, where the mayor lives, demanding his resignation. And an attorney who actually fights against police brutality, interestingly, helps minorities. He and his wife came out in front of their house. They were scared. He had a rifle. She had a pistol. And they stood in front of the house. They didn't know what was going to happen. Thankfully, the protesters passed by. But the attorney said, this isn't a protest. It's a revolution. His words, this isn't a protest. It's a revolution. And immediately, it reminded me of the famous words, and this was probably in the back of his mind, the famous words from the beginning of the French Revolution, when King Louis is being apprised about what is happening, and, oh, is it a revolt? Is it some kind of revolt? No, a revolution. July 14th, 1789. A revolt? No, a revolution. This isn't a protest today. It's a revolution. Friends, we are here as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. And day and night, as much as we are flooded with hate mail, with death wishes, with the ugliest, most profane, despicable comments coming our way day and night, which we wear as a badge of honor, bearing reproach for the name of the Lord, we consider it an honor to be attacked and maligned and hated for him. As much as we receive that, we receive a constant flood of appreciation, of thank yous from so many of you. Thank you for the broadcast. Thank you for the articles. And you're sending that to us day and night. I appreciate it deeply because, friends, this is a team effort. And it's a scriptural principle that as you're blessed, that you give back to support the ministry. So your first giving should be in your home congregation. Support that local work. But if we're of help to you, if these radio broadcasts, if these podcasts, if these YouTube videos, if these Facebook live streams, if these articles, if we are helping you, if we are blessing you all at no charge, this is our joy and privilege to give to you at no charge. If we're a help to you, would you stand with us today? And we just want to remind you, as we've almost never talked about finances over the air for years and years and years, during this moment where I'm unable to travel out and speak, all traveling speaking has been canceled for several months, and going out on the road, receiving offerings to help the ministry, I'll go out and speak to bring in money to help bring in funds to bring the message to you, to serve you. So we're unable to do that right now, which means we're even more relying on each of you to stand with us. So if you're watching on Facebook right now, there's a donate button. Would you click on it? Stand with us. Your gift of any size, one time, regular, is super, super appreciated. And if everyone watching say, I'm give this, I'm $5, $1, $10, it makes a difference. The same on YouTube. At the bottom of your chat window, there's a dollar sign. Click on that. Your contribution of any size helps us reach more and more people. And again, is just making up for a lack and the body coming together and saying, Dr. Brown, we believe in what you're doing, and we want to stand with you and help get this message out. Because you know, friends, we're not backing down. We're not quieting down. We're not shutting down. We're not compromising. And we're not going to speak with anger. We're not going to speak with hatred. We're going to speak with wisdom, with the love of God, with the power of the Spirit, and speak the truth, believing, as Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 8, there's nothing we can do against the truth, but only for the truth. Also, you can go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on donate. Your gifts of any size make a massive difference. And friends, we're in revolutionary times, but I'm telling you, a Jesus revolution, the nation being touched by the gospel. It's happening. It's going to happen in greater and greater measure as we give ourselves together to the purposes of God. Thanks for standing with us.